welcome to episode 11 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, we take a look at the creepiest parts of the classic Disney film, Darby O'Gill and the Little People. That's not supposed to sound so sinister, I guess, but that's how it sounds to me. The Little People. Before we jump into that, I do want to mention that this week, on March 18th to be exact, a brand new trailer for Maleficent was released. Now, they're saying this is the third trailer, but we know it's the fourth if you listen to episode we did a few back about Maleficent. They put one out and then made it disappear because it was bad. But anyways, this trailer is a lot of the same stuff, but there's a few things in it that wasn't there before that is devastating. If you haven't seen it yet, go over to creepykingdom.com, click on the videos tab. It's definitely the first one there. Well, it depends when you're looking at it. I say definitely, but it's amazing. Check it out. You know, well, I'm going to have to get Sarah and David back on the show from FreshBakedDisney.com so we can talk about that trailer. But that's just something, a little tidbit for the future. But, you know, to be topical and current, I had to make sure that everyone listening has a chance to check out that trailer. Well, without any further ado, let's begin. Welcome once again to the creepiest film. It's a special edition because we're breaking the chronological order that we've been going in just for St. Patrick's Day, and we are going to be talking about 1959's Darby O'Gill and the Little People. I have a special co-host with me. Everyone say hello. Everyone say hello. That's funny. Let's see if we can hear him. Everyone say hello to Jeannie.
If I hear them say anything, I'm really going to just hang up.
Everyone in podcast land, say hello to Jeannie.
Hi, everybody.
Jeannie is from theprincesspapers.com. That is your blog, correct?
Yep, that's my blog. I also work for another one, www.fanzone.com.
Excellent. And you are also on a podcast there, correct?
Yeah, we have a little Midnight Magic live show on Friday nights at midnight where we're all sleepy on WDW Fan Zone. So nothing fancy, just us goofing around and harassing each other a little bit. And obviously talking about Disney.
I was about to say, do you talk about Disney at all, or you just harass each other?
we talk about Disney. We actually talk about Disney more than we harass each other, so I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, that'll work.
if you actually want some Disney information.
If you want it, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
So tell me about your blog. What's going on there? What kind of things are you blogging about?
Well, my blog has a couple interesting things. I live about 2.5 hours from Disney World in Florida, so I'm there a lot. Every 2 weeks, something comes up, and I race down there and check out what's going on. I've also got a few interviews on my blog. I've got one with Stacy, you know, if you've stayed at a Disney resort.
Stacy J.?
What's that?
Is it Stacy J?
Yep, Stacy. Stacy J. Oswald. If you've seen her host in the Must Do Disney, I have an interview with her up on the website. Wow. She talks about a lot of interesting things, her charities and stuff like that.
Stacy J. is actually going to be an upcoming guest on this show.
Oh, is she great?
If you could believe that.
Yes, she's fantastic. And she's, you know, got the voiceover show. So, She's really a fantastic lady, and just really kind with interviews and stuff for those of us in the Disney community.
Oh yeah, definitely. Shout out to Stacy.
Hey Stacy. So you can check out either wdwfanzone.com or theprincesspapers.com. Oh, and on the Princess Papers, I do a little more tongue-in-cheek things. If you're interested in an article about the, what I call the majestic castle crane that's in Magic Kingdom.
The crane?
Yes. I have an article on the crane and how to turn it into a legitimate Disney icon with merchandising.
Now, in case people don't know, about once a year, there's this crane that's always up around the castle around this time of year. They're doing some type of something work with it, but it's up there for months.
Usually. Yeah, it's been up there for a while. So, and I've seen a lot of families standing there for their once in a lifetime portrait with the crane as a feature. So I came up with a few ideas that are on theprincesspapers.com that may make it a little less painful, and it includes the Majestic Castle Crane cupcake and cocktail.
All right. Cupcakes and cocktails. That sounds very, very nice and cheerful and pleasant. But unfortunately, we're going to have to change the mood here a little bit as we are on the Creepy Kingdom podcast.
You know, the cupcakes would be black, okay?
All right.
That makes you feel better. And the cocktail would probably be made with a base of Beverly, if that helps.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, lots of creepy faces happening with the cocktail.
All right, well, let's get into it. We are going to be talking about Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Experience again the incredible adventures of Darby O'Gill and the Lost Kingdom of the Little People.
Once you're here, there's no going back.
Here's entertainment to delight the entire family with Sean Connery and King Brian, the fun-lovingest leprechaun ever to rule the land of enchantment. Don't miss Walt Disney's Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Rated G.
So, the synopsis of the film on IMDb it reads as follows. A wily old codger, that's a word I don't hear too often, matches wits with the king of the leprechauns and help plays matchmaker for his daughter and the strapping lad who replaced him as a caretaker. So that's something there, huh? That's it. You know, that's a good summary of the film. Now, you have seen the film, but not recently, correct?
I have not recently, but I have seen a couple of clips for the film to refresh my memory. And what's even better about IMDb is the comments after the description of the film. That's where you get the real description.
Yes, that's true. So, all right,
because every comment says, "Wow, that was creepy." it's like the first line in every comment. You know, that creeped me out as a child is the first comment on every review of the movie.
Well, there you go. I mean, if that doesn't prove it, this deserves to be on the show. I don't know what else does.
Yeah, this is your calling for an Irish-themed movie.
All right, so at the beginning of the film, I mean, well, there's two things going on here, as is mentioned there. There's Darby O'Gill, the main character, telling people about his encounters with the leprechauns and then interacting with the leprechauns and then trying to escape them, and he's trying to get his wishes. And there's songs, there's drinking, there's fighting.
It's not stereotypical at all.
Yeah, not at all. And, you know, those are the parts that I enjoy. But then there's this whole other plot line going on where his daughter is falling in love with the caretaker that's supposed to replace him.
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
Young, hot Sean Connery.
Young Sean Connery, which I will like to mention that this is actually the first Hollywood film Sean Connery was in 1959. This is what started his long acting career. Before he was James Bond, he was Michael McBride, a young Dubliner. Which apparently, based on years, you say this, and I've seen it many places, he's very attractive when he was young. I don't see it.
Holds his own for his age. He's, you know, not bad for getting up there.
Okay.
But young Sean Connery in this movie, not creepy. Not creepy. Very not creepy.
He kind of reminds me a little bit of an... You're probably going to disagree. It kind of looks like a little like Gaston from Beauty and the Beast, his whole like vibe and his look.
Okay, I did see the scene where he was walking into the pub, and I guess I can see that.
Yeah, yes.
I you're right.
All right, yeah. Thank you. Thanks for backing me up on that.
Yes, there's a little bit of Gaston happening there.
Which apparently women like him as well, so I don't know. But so
no comment.
No comment. All right, move on. So I don't really want to focus on the parts of the film but with his daughter and the romance. It's not really that interesting, but the daughter does come into play really strongly in the end, and I guess that's trying to build up that Darby is trying to get three wishes from the leprechaun so that he could provide the life for his daughter. So it just kind of shows, you know, that's his motivation. Even though he's a little bit of a trickster, you know, he just wants his daughter to be taken care of. That's why he's trying to set her up with Sean Connery. Just wants her to be taken care of. So, all right. Anyways, so in the beginning of the film, Darby's in his local pub, and he starts telling people about, you know, King Brian, and everyone kind of thinks he's crazy, but they like listen to his stories and all that. And as soon as he starts going, that's kind of like the first creepy part.
Now the night was dark, and the mountain was covered with mist, and the moon was no bigger than the light from a halfpenny candle. But it didn't hide him from me. For there he stood with an angry little goblin, and his face as fierce as fire. King Brian, my old boy, oh, I've got you at last, and I'm not going to let you go until you grant me the favor of three grand wishes.
Wait now. Maybe we can talk this over. Will you have a pinch of snuff?
Aye, and you blow it into my eyes. I'm up to all your dirty little tricks.
You've gone too far. You'll get no wishes from me at all now.
You'll either give them to me or else you'll answer to the church. I'll have Father Murphy curse you with a blessing that'll shrivel you up in a minute.
Yeah, that's the first creepy point I give right there, because it kind of kicks into a flashback. All of a sudden, the music gets dark. There's this spooky mountain, you know, and he's leaned over trying to, you know, and then in like a little hutch, and then the leprechaun appears. So that's you know, that's like 8 minutes in, you see the leprechaun, and it gets real spooky right away. Do you remember that part at all?
No, I don't really remember that part. I just remember once he goes into their land.
Right, okay, so that's coming up very shortly.
Yeah.
So, a little bit later, after he goes to the pub, you know, Darby goes home, and he's walking with his horse, or trying to put his horse back into the shed. Is that where the horses go? I don't know. I'm not a horse person. the horse house?
A barn?
The cow house.
Horses. Like a lawnmower goes in the shed, and a horse goes in the barn.
All right,
maybe.
The barn. I'll give it a barn. So, yeah. whatever. So
I think in honor of this being an Irish film and for St. Patrick's Day, that there should be drinking involved in this review.
You're right. I am not drinking at all, but, you know, surprisingly, I am completely sober, and I forgot what a barn was. But So, the horse doesn't want to go in the barn, starts running off, and Darby's chasing her, him, against her. Her name is, the horse's name, Cleopatra. And you start heading to that mountain that you see in the flashback. And so you know that they're heading towards where, you know, where the little people are.
Oh, hold that! Oh! Oh, I tell you!
And then there's an opening of a well where the horse is just hanging out there, just going, like freaking out. And Darby's like, Cleopatra, time to come in, you know. And Cleopatra doesn't want to. And then, which is still really unexplained, there's no explanation of why this happens. The horse face kind of turns into like a ghost face. Like he's like the horse turned evil for like a second.
And now you see why all of the reviews on for the movie were, as a child, this creeped me out.
Yes.
this is where it starts to be a little bit scary for children.
Right. I will say though, there's a huge chunk of this movie that's not creepy, but the beginning right there is just like, okay, so the horse is possessed. And it's kind of like this transparent ghost face kind of thing that does appear in similar forms later on in the film.
So what you're saying is it's a peppy, cheery, you know, dancing, singing movie, except for the possessed horse ghost face.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Wow, you just summed it up
exactly
all right there.
Not selling me on it, but go ahead.
I'm not selling you on. So I guess we should say too that we talked about this before we started recording, that you're not a fan of scary, creepy things in films, correct?
I appreciate the cinematography.
Right.
However, it's late in the evening now, it's almost bedtime, and I really don't like being creeped out so much now. No, oh, not a horror
well,
flick
you
chick.
Came to the wrong kingdom.
But yet I willingly allowed myself to come on here to be creeped out by you, because I'm that kind of friend. That's, it's a Disney thing.
Yeah,
I'm here for you.
I appreciate it. But you're not being creeped out by me. I didn't make this movie. I'm just telling you about it.
Yeah, but you turned it from the happy... But I watched the trailer, you know. Disney spun it as a happy, you know, leprechaun dancing movie. You just said possessed ghost horse face. They didn't put that in the trailer.
No, they didn't put that in the trailer.
That wasn't in the trailer.
This is only 20 minutes into the film where you see the ghost face horse.
The possessed ghost face horse. That's second tier creepy.
Yes. So back to the possession part of it. He obviously is somewhat possessed or something, because he kicks Darby down into the well. So he falls all the way down into the well. And then he's in the land of the leprechauns. And he sees King Brian, his old friend. But King Brian says to him, you know, you've gone off and you're telling everyone about us, but, you know, we want you to stay here. He's like, well, I got to go. He's like, nope, you're going to be here forever. You're stuck. You have to live in the land of the leprechaun. So Darby's trying to figure out a way to get out of there. Now, you said you did see this scene on YouTube.
I saw the scene where he's saying he's getting back to his daughter and everything. And the king was very much, you're not going anywhere.
No.
That was a little, Leprechaun King, not nice.
He wasn't nice.
No, he's not pleasant. He's not cheery.
No. He wasn't then, because he wanted him to stay And what he wanted him to do was for him to play some music. Because Darby O'Gill is an excellent fiddler.
Yes, he's his fiddle slave.
Yes, that's what he wanted to do. So he plays the fox chase, and the whole colony of leprechauns goes bananas. They start dancing and just having a good old time.
Did you see the part where the king does the backflip on the chair?
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw it, right? Yeah, they're flipping around. They're doing all this stuff. And what happens is, as these guards going, he starts playing progressively faster and faster and faster, and the leprechauns start dancing faster and faster to the music.
Oh, then they get on the little mini horses to go even faster.
Right, right. Down on the horses. And
where do they keep their horses? Do they have a shed or a barn?
I don't know. They're a mini barn. So it's like
I was a little creeped out by the little mini horses, because where did they come from?
Yeah, they just came out of nowhere. Not explained either, but that's fine. So so the song is called The Fox Chase, so it's supposed to be about, you know, a hunting song. They talk about it a little before he plays it. So he kind of says it's time to go hunt while he's playing, and all leprechauns are like, okay. So they take off. And so, like, everyone left. So the cave magically opens with leprechaun powers or whatever, and everyone runs out, and Darby's like, oh, now it's time for my escape. So he tries to leave, but before, he wants to grab some gold because he's like, oh, no one's watching me, but the thing's closing and he has to run. And of course, as he runs, all the gold falls out of his pocket. So there's the lesson there, man. If you're greedy, you're going to be trapped in a leprechaun cave. That is a lesson learned. So he goes back to the barn, because there's this whole scene in the barn where he knows that King Brian will come after him because he told him not to leave. So he goes to his barn and hangs out. All of a sudden, King Brian, you know, magically appears to the door. And he said, I told you not to leave. You have to come back with me. And he's like, okay, well, you know, before we do, you know, why don't we have some drinks? So he pours King Brian up something in a jug that's alcoholic in some fashion. They might have said what it was, but I don't remember what it was. And
Guinness.
What'd you say?
It was Guinness.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Or maybe Jameson.
It was a mixture of both.
it was a combo. Combo cocktail.
And then they sit there and they drink all night while they kind of do this song called the Wishing Song, where they had to come up with, like, limericks. And I will say that all the limericks they say are very, they're not clever at all. It's probably some of the weakest lyrics in the whole movie.
Was this prior to the Sherman Brother days of creating music?
59. I don't know. I mean, Sherman Brothers did not do the music in this. I know that.
Yeah. I'm assuming there was nothing supercalifragilisticexpialidocious about the song.
No, not at all. I mean, it's supposed to be clever. You know, limerick's supposed to be clever, and none of them were clever. They were stupid. So I may have thought they were funny when I was a child, but I was not impressed last night as I rewatched this. As I watch this film every year, St. Patrick's Day. What Darby's trying to do is keep him there till the morning, because apparently in the morning, leprechauns, or during the daytime, leprechauns don't have powers anymore. So once he does that, he figures he could keep him trapped, you know, so he does that. So they drink all night doing limericks, and next thing you know, it's morning, and he doesn't have his powers, and so then he goes, well, now you're going to do what I say. You're going to give me my wishes, because he wouldn't give him his three wishes earlier in the movie. And he's like, I don't have to do anything. At nighttime comes, I'm going to get you. Then Darby just like, oh, yeah? He decides to bring out his cat named Ginger.
Oh, I do remember the cat scene.
Yes, the cat scene. And this would be my next creepiest part. Because he threatens the cat to attack King Brian. King Brian hides behind this this wheel or something. And
well, King Brian is kind of cat toy size.
Right. He's just about it. But the funny thing about this scene, to me, that's funny, is when they show the close-ups of the cat trying to get at King Brian through the spokes, you know, the actor is a human, obviously. And so there's this big, huge puppet cat paws trying to get at him. And they try to show it from the perspective of King Brian, so it's definitely creepy to think, like, you're, like, mouse size and a cat is trying to kill you, essentially.
Well, have you had a cat scratch? They hurt.
Yes, they do. I don't
And if that cat claw was as big as you, ouch.
No, yeah, that is a creepy part.
That's like, it suddenly turns into a slasher film.
Literally.
Yeah.
But not to worry. He was scared enough by the cat to do what Darby wanted. You know, so he takes King Brian into a big burlap sack and he's like, oh, I'm going to go to the bar. He brings him to the bar where he told all the stories where everyone kind of thinks he was making it up and he was a drunk. And so he has the sack, and inside the sack, he puts it down and it's like moving, you know, and that's kind of creepy too, is that they won't show inside the bag. They just kind of show the sack moving.
Well, can you imagine if you were in a pub and you were half lit and all of a sudden somebody brings in a little sack moving around saying they caught a leprechaun? I mean, if you're drunk, I'd be freaking out a little bit. Like, what's in the bag?
Well, this is what they ended up doing was instead of just taking him out of the bag and being like, hey, see, here's leprechaun, because what they did was they got a drink. Someone poured him a drink, and they put the drink in the bag, and then the drink magically lowers down, and then he drinks the drink, and then it comes up empty. And so that's the way that he proves that there's a leprechaun. And the whole time thinking, why doesn't anyone look in the sack? You know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that would be easy, wouldn't it? Would he disappear if somebody else saw him? Or I don't know what the magic is there.
No. I mean, apparently he doesn't have any powers to do anything during the day. So that's what's going on with him. So that happens. And pretty much for, like, I don't know, another good 45 minutes to an hour, nothing really creepy happens in the movie. You know, we got this stuff with his daughter falling in love with Sean Connery, and that's all very cute. But it's almost like it's a different movie. Like, I mean, I guess it's trying to have all these different elements to it. You know, like,
it's the normal part, James. Just tough it out, get through it. Part. You can do it.
I mean,
it's for the normal people. We'll be all right. The creepy will come back.
I know. It was kind of boring, but I will say that Darby O'Gill's daughter, Katie, is quite the looker. She was a beautiful young lady, so that helped me kind of get through it, you know, that she had a little spunk to her, you know. She was, you know, and she sang beautifully. I didn't hate it, you know. She was great, but it was kind of like, as I'm watching this, trying to pinpoint all the creepiest points, I mean, there was a big lull. I will say that. And there's this whole other plot line where this other guy wants Sean Connery's job and also wants to be in a relationship with Darby O'Gill's daughter. So obviously he's trying to sabotage something. And it wasn't really creepy as much as he was just, you know, just kind of a jerk. You know, so.
Well, that's where the Gaston part of the movie is.
Right. Yeah, it was a little
that's the little bit of Gaston huffing and puffing.
But the cool part about it is that his name was Pony. So there's my reference of Pony. I don't even need to bring. Actually, I will bring Pony up a little bit later. But and of course, he's the one that's in the bar that's always saying, "Yeah, I don't want to hear this crap. Leprechauns aren't real." He's just a negative Nancy every time you see him. With such a charming name, such a surprise. So, okay. As I kind of skip over a lot of things that happen here.
All the normal parts.
Yeah, let's get to the end of the movie, which to me is my favorite part of the movie.
Of course far. It is. This is the part that makes the children cry.
Yes. Love this. All right, so so Katie gets upset. She pretty much is mad because she finds out that Sean Connery actually was sent there to replace his father as a groundskeeper for some rich guy. And she thought he was just going there to help, but Darby didn't want Sean to tell her because she didn't want to upset her. So now she feels everyone's been lying to her, so she's angry. So she runs off. And where else can she run off to than that creepy mountain where the leprechauns are from? where nothing good ever happens.
At night, right?
Of course, yeah, at night, yes.
Yes, at night.
And we don't really know what happens, but eventually Darby and Sean chase after her, and by the time they get there, they see her passed out on the side of the mountain, appearing dead. So that was pretty creepy, because at this point there had been a good, you know, I said 45 minutes of cheerful pleasantries, and all of a sudden we're like, oh wow, is she dead? What's going on with her? But she's not dead, but it might be happening soon.
Banshee.
Maybe it's just the wind.
It's the wail of the banshee. The same as I heard the night that Kitty's mother was taken. She'll be destroyed entirely.
Because the next thing that happens is you start hearing this creepy wail, this noise coming in the background. And Darby goes,
"I'll be back."
Yes, it is very, very much like the end of the Haunted Mansion. And Darby goes, "Oh, it's the Banshee." And it's like, it's the same night, it's the same sound I heard when my wife died. So basically Darby knows that the Banshee is coming to take his daughter. So the next thing you see is they bring her into the house. She's laying in bed, appearing lifeless. Father Murphy is there. Looks like, you know, like he maybe is going to give her last rites or something. There's no dialogue going on there, so I don't know. But as they're standing in the house, the banshee sounds are louder and louder and louder. And Darby runs to the front door. And there it is, face to face with the Banshee. Now, you said you saw some of the Banshee clips on YouTube tonight. Which ones did you see?
I saw the scene where she's laying like on the rocks of the cliff area, and the Banshee is coming out of the sky towards them.
Right, that was the last thing.
It reminded me of the Haunted Mansion at the end with the, you know, the cloaked hurry back, you know, and she's coming at you with the all glowy and stuff. And he throws the lantern at it and like runs off.
Right. I should have mentioned that. So that's how she gets the Banshee to leave for a little bit, which is kind of odd because.
Didn't think that method was going to work with that lantern thing.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I guess the Banshee doesn't like lanterns. Okay.
Yes. That was a unique thing.
Yeah.
Just happened to have a magical lantern that would scare off a banshee. Oh, okay.
So when he answers the door, eventually,
yeah.
Banshee's right there. And this has to be the part that really must have terrified children. I'm talking, you're staring right in the face of the banshee, and it's not a quick cut. You got like a good solid 3 to 5 seconds, like right there.
I didn't see that part, and they cut it right before that part on YouTube.
Yeah, that is terrifying, really creepy. I love it. It's just like, it actually does kind of give me the chills, because it's something a little bit with the old style of filmmaking, and it is, there's just something about it. It's just like, so he picks up a shovel and starts swatting at the banshee, and apparently the banshee doesn't like shovels either. So the banshee starts like trying to get away, even though it's like going through the banshee because it's a ghost, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually the banshee just like starts levitating like higher than the shovel can reach. So, you know.
That's the standard banshee defense move.
Right. So then the banshee is like, oh, well, enough of this. Time to get down to business. And kind of points towards the sky and does like a come forward motion. And then from the distance, you see the death coach.
King Brian! King Brian!
What is it, man?
Your Highness!
What is it?
It's the Ghost of Bauer! The death coach! Send it away! It's coming for Katie! Send it away!
But it's not within my powers, man. Once it sets out, it can never return empty.
Then give me my third wish and let it take me instead.
You don't know what you're asking for.
You promised. Don't break your word.
Damn you, Gil. Never in my born days.
Give me my third wish.
More's the pity. Granted.
Darby recognizes it right away. And he calls for King Brian, the leprechaun, to help him. So he appears, and he's like, the death coach is coming for Katie. So that's basically the gist of it is here. When someone's about to die, the banshee starts, you know, wailing. Then the banshee actually shows up and summons the death coach, which then is supposed to put... when you die, you're supposed to go into the death coach, and I guess that's your descent to the afterlife is in the death coach. So...
Which looks surprisingly like the hearse that's outside the Haunted Mansion.
That's true. I don't know if there's a direct connection between the Banshee and the Death Coach and the Haunted Mansion, but it's, you know, it was all in the same time period. It's a very similar style, you know.
Well, it's got that old-fashioned horse-drawn hearse look.
Right, and vintage Disney style to it as well. So.
And the Banshee's the very Grim Reaper look.
Right, right.
It's your standard Grim Reaper.
But it's a lady Grim Reaper.
I didn't see that visual as much on YouTube. You couldn't really tell.
Well, no, that when you answer the door,
so it's a lady Grim Reaper.
Yeah. When you answer the door, you see her face, and
with a shovel aversion.
With the what?
With a shovel aversion.
Right. Yes.
Maybe the male Grim Reapers, like, are immune to shovels.
Maybe.
You should research that in your creepy movie-ness.
Right, yeah, I should have prepared for the show.
Do a Banshee versus Grim Reaper defense research.
Right, yeah, I think that's what everyone wants to hear about. So anyways, King Brian appears and... It goes, Darby says, please make the death coach go away. It's coming for Katie. And then King Brian goes, I can't. Once the death coach is coming, it can't leave unless it has someone else. And I do want to interject that this scenario is very similar to when you're getting your car towed. I don't know if you ever had your car towed before, but... It's a very horrible experience. It is like a death coach is coming. and I parked in the wrong spot once. Like, I was blocking something and I didn't even realize it. And I was going out to dinner. It was actually on an anniversary dinner. So it was a nice dinner. I come out and I see the tow truck and police lights down the street. I'm like, what is going on down there? That's near where my car is parked. And then I realized that my car is literally being towed as I was right there. I run down the street. I'm like, oh, I'm here. It's my car. What did I do? And like, you parked in this, you blocked this guy's driveway. I was like, I didn't realize. I'm so sorry. I'm like, I'm here. Like, put my car down.
You didn't call on any leprechaun assistance.
No, I tried. But basically the guy was like, well, you know, once I hook it up, like, I can't put it down. Like, I had to pay like $200 to get my car. Like, this is the same thing. When the death coach comes, it can't leave empty handed, just like a tow truck. So, I don't know. I'll probably cut this out of the show, but that's what I thought of. But anyways,
it's like, a movie all young children and families can relate to.
Right. Anyways, Darby says he sacrifices himself. He's like, I'll go in. So he does it. So the death coach pulls up, and the coachman is a headless coachman.
Creepy.
And says from somewhere in his body, I don't know, not from his head because he didn't have one, but he actually talks.
He talks without a head?
Yep.
Whoa.
Yep, and he says,
Darby O'Gill, get in.
So Darby gets in, and he heads off. King Brian hops in there with him just to ride with him. I guess he's going to hop out before they get to wherever he's going.
King Brian's just getting a lift.
Yeah.
Okay.
And something else that happens in the beginning of the film, in the first story he tells, is that he had three wishes that he made, but apparently when you make four wishes, it voids the first three. So basically he's in the coach, he's riding off to death.
It's nice that this amuses you.
Sorry, I mean,
he's riding off to death.
I don't know. It's kind of like, where are you going? Like, why is a head? I mean, I don't want to get too deep here or religious or whatever, but a evil banshee comes and summons a headless coachman. And then
everybody,
you
hop in,
and then you go, that's how you die, and then it descends into the sky. That doesn't seem like the pathway to heaven to me. I don't know, like, seems like it should have been going south, but I don't know. That's just my two cents. That's why it's amusing to me. So so while he's in the coach, he's like, he actually says, he says he wishes, I forget what he says he wished. I should have got that down. Does it say any in here? I don't know. I'm looking at this summary. I don't know. Whatever. He's like, oh, I wish I could have done whatever. Whatever. He made a wish. He made a fourth wish without realizing it. And when that happened, he lost all his wishes. And his third wish was that he could go on the death coach and not Katie. So that meant that he wasn't going to die. So he was back. So that was, it's kind of weak, you know. It's kind of like, well, if you always knew
the death coach. Spoiler alert: the death coach doesn't take her though. Instead, again.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's what you would think would happen, right? But no, just,
yeah,
no one's,
I mean,
going anymore.
There's a instead of clause on there, right?
Right. Nope. Just no one's going on the death coach because anymore.
Wow, loophole.
Yeah, a strange loophole.
You better look for one of those next time your car gets hooked up to tow.
Yeah, I'll make a fourth wish next time the car gets towed and see what happens. So, pretty much you would think the movie's over then. But then they have this other scene afterwards where they're back at the bar and good old Pony shows up again. And Darby's telling his tales and he doesn't want to hear about it and he gets angry and... All Sean Connery comes in and he says, leave him alone. And then All of a sudden, there's a good old-fashioned bar fight between Pony and Sean Connery. Broken bottles, and Sean Connery knocks him out. And I'm like, that's beautiful. That's the perfect way to end a Disney movie. With a good old-fashioned bar brawl and someone getting knocked out.
That was his audition for his James Bond role later.
Right. Well, it sort of was, because he said this was his first role. I don't know if I said that on the recording or if I was just talking to you about it before. But so they were like, "Oh, you got the part." I mean, there is a feature that talks a little bit about that on the DVD, but I'll get into that in a moment. So that's the film.
You forgot the ending.
No, that is the ending.
No, the anti creepy part of the ending where Sean Connery sings.
Oh, that wasn't in the end. I did skip over that.
Oh,
yes.
I thought that was in the. It says that's on the ending when you go to YouTube. It's listed as the ending.
Oh,
him singing.
You know what it is? That's a reprise or reprise, whatever you pronounce it. Yeah, there's a whole scene. Like I said, the part I skipped over where they're falling in love with a song called "A Lovely Irish Girl." And yes, Sean Connery sings. And yeah, the literal closing shot is Darby on a coach, steering the coach with Sean Connery and Katie on the background as they sing the few lines from the song "Lovely Irish Girl." And I guess that's the happily ever after.
So sandwiched in between the possessed ghost horse face,
yes,
and the screaming banshee and death coach with headless driver is a Sean Connery musical.
That's what the description should be on IMDb. You summed it up beautifully.
Thank you. That I think some of that was on the trailer. I might have paraphrased a little bit.
No, you got it.
Okay.
So I would like to say my thoughts on this film, that this is actually one of my all-time favorite Disney films. This is a film that my parents shared with me at a very young age. God, I must have been 6 years old or something. And it's a movie that they enjoyed when they were kids, so I haven't really gotten too into this on this show, but, you know, I did get the Disney bug legally from my parents, particularly my mother, who, you know, as soon as she could, was sharing all of her favorite Disney films. And this was one, and The Parent Trap, the original one, not the Lindsay Lohan one. Those are films that we always rent for me and my sister to watch, and I must have watched this movie over and over again as a young child, and I don't remember ever being scared by the banshee, which I guess kind of explains me right now, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, so we can't blame this movie for creating you. You were already that way.
Yeah, I was already that way, I guess. Because when I was thinking about it, I was like, that banshee, especially that scene at the door, man, that face-to-face thing, that's scary. You know, that's very creepy. That didn't really affect me at all. I don't know. I just love the leprechaun dancing, I guess.
So when you watch the movie every year now to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, admit it, James, you fast forward over all the singing nice part, don't you?
No, I'm not. I'm not a horrible
I'm
person.
Shocked. I'm surprised. You endure the normal part.
The normal. Well, that's normal is relative, of course, but or subjective. But yeah, I mean, like I said, Katie is very easy on the eyes, so, you know, I don't mind watching her, you know, fall in love with Sean Connery. And it is very amusing hearing Sean Connery sing. So.
Well, yeah. I I did enjoy that part of the YouTube video. Just like, okay, creepy banshee, now Sean Connery's singing. Fine. It was slightly confusing from watching it from a clip's point of view.
Well, now that I explained it, I'm sure it's not any less confusing. All right, now let's jump into some creepy trivia.
Yay!
When the film was released, there was a television special called I Captured the King of the Leprechauns, which shows Walt Disney going to Ireland to find King Brian, the King of the Leprechauns, and asking him to be in the film.
Walt always had plenty of tricks up his sleeve, and he wanted to tell everyone, in a kidding kind of way, that the leprechauns in his new movie were the real deal. There were photos of Walt visiting King Brian on the set, biographies of King Brian, but none of the actor playing him, and a special thank you in the movie itself.
I captured the king.
Can you believe Walt even made a whole TV show about convincing King Brian to appear in the movie?
It's not the first time I've heard of him doing something like this. For example, the actress that did the voice of Snow White was not credited. In fact, none of the voice actors were credited, I don't think. I don't remember. But I know that Snow White, the woman that did Snow White, was not credited, and she was not allowed to act or do any other voice acting ever again, as per her contract, so that no one would hear Snow White's voice anywhere else ever again. So I'm not really surprised that he wanted to pretend that leprechauns were real too. So.
I'm not going to comment on any of this on my personal opinion. Next creepy fact.
Okay. the next thing is, it's not really creepy, but it's something that I think is really important to filmmaking, is that this film has amazing visual effects, and they're all just camera tricks. This is before CGI. You know, like, there are leprechauns all throughout this film, and then Darby O'Gill's interacting with them. And on the DVD, which was, I think it was released in 2004, I don't think this one made the Blu-ray yet, but there is an amazing special feature. Anyone that's interested in filmmaking, which I am, it's called Little People Big Effects. Now, this was before that television show came out, so I don't think it was named after Little People Big World, but it shows how they pulled all this stuff off.
Walt Disney wanted to make sure that people truly believed that leprechauns were real. He turned to one of his most trusted special effects artists, Peter Ellenshaw, who had worked at the studio for many years. In this shot of Darby's feet walking past the leprechauns, he had the actor and the camera on a platform high above the soundstage floor. Here is Peter checking out the angle of the leprechauns on the stage below. This technician is painting the studio floor to match the color of the platform so the camera can't tell where the platform ends or the floor begins. Why are these men lying down on the job? If you look closely, you will see that they are holding little leprechaun puppets. These puppets were placed between the camera and Darby's feet. They move in the same way as the real actors playing the leprechauns far below on the stage floor, pretending to watch a giant Darby walking past. Having the little leprechauns in the foreground makes it totally convincing that Darby is walking through the leprechaun crowd. It's those kinds of details that set a Disney production apart from all the rest.
The special effects leader, specialist, I don't know, whatever his title was, supervisor, that's the word before, Peter Ellenshaw. He did a lot for Disney films in this time period, and he's quite the master.
Is he one of the background artists with 20,000 Leagues?
Yes, he painted the matte painting backgrounds for 20,000, yep.
Just on a side note, my article that's coming out tomorrow with David Doss as the Disney artist,
mm-hmm.
Ellenshaw with 20,000 Leagues was one of the people he cited as one of his inspirations for art.
Oh, well, there
so
you go. Nice.
On a side note, I thought that was funny. I mean, when would I ever use that again? 2 days later. Funny.
Well, Once you get deep in the Disney gang, a lot of the same names keep popping up.
Yeah, well, it's the same 20 people for everything for about 50 years, isn't it?
Just about, yep. So, I tried to find this special feature on YouTube, and it's just no one's uploaded it. So I would even say it's worth getting the DVD for if you're interested in filmmaking and how movies are made, or and just the magic of that, of just practical effects and playing, doing camera tricks and using mirrors and all this crazy stuff. They have diagrams. They have all this stuff. In fact, I know that a friend of mine that went to film school, one of his professors actually talked all about used this film as a point of reference. So this film is widely appreciated for the accomplishments of its time. So I do.
It does have some really great visuals when you see, like when they're doing the fiddle dance scene. Yeah. What would you say the song was? The Foxtrot or Fox?
Oh, they call it the
Hunt?
Fox Chase.
Yes, that. When he's playing the fiddle for them and they going faster and faster, and they're all dancing around him. And so you see him and you see the horses, you see the people, and it doesn't really look awkward. It actually looks like it fits in together and that they're at the same place. It's for that long ago, it looks visually very good.
Right, and they actually explain in that feature how they pulled off that scene. And basically what was happening there is that so Darby is on a platform that's up like, I don't know, like 30 or 40 feet above where the rest of the leprechauns are. But the camera's laying flat, so, and they matched it up so that you can't see, you can't tell where the platform ends and the bottom where the other leprechauns are begin.
So it isn't done with, like, overlays with a green screen?
Nope. That was all real. There's no green screen stuff there.
See, that's what I just assumed it was.
Nope, it was all real, really happening right there. It was just, that's the forced perspective stuff that they were talking about. It's incredible. And,
wow.
And there's some leprechauns on the other side of his feet in the shot,
mm-hmm,
that are dancing, and those are puppets because you only see the back of their heads.
Oh.
So
I see. I was wondering when I was looking at it why I wasn't seeing that off visual edging that you get with green screen. Well, because there wasn't any.
There was no green screen. So it's incredible. It really is. The things that they came up with, or Peter Ellenshaw in particular came up with, like when he, you know, to make this happen, it's just all just imagination, really. It's like, well, let's try this, we'll put it there. I mean, there was no precedent for it. It's pretty amazing. So I still love this film, and I'll still watch it, you know, even the love story, because, you know, I like love. I'm not evil.
Only because you know that the, like, screaming banshee and headless guy are coming later. Just sitting there rubbing your hands together going, oh, it's going to get good.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Thank you for having me on as a victim guest. I appreciate it.
Victim guest. Well, thank you for participating, even though, you know, you're not the biggest creepy fan. You know, you're still a Disney fan. And, you know, I'd like to have all spectrums on here for the Disney community. So thank you for joining me on the show.
It's my creeped out pleasure.
Excellent. So if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
They can find me on Twitter, still awake all night, at Jeanie, Jeanie, blue, like the color, 114. And you can also see me on theprincesspapers.com. So, and www.fanzone.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much, James, for creeping me out.
Well, there you have it, Walt. Banshees, death, coaches, headless coachmen. Oh, the Irish love it all.
Thanks again to Jeannie for coming on the show. You can check out her blog again at theprincesspapers.com. This week, Muppets Most Wanted is released, the newest Muppet movie. And I'm going to try to go out and see it. I'm a huge Muppets fan. Hopefully you get a chance to go out and check it out too this weekend. Coming up next episode, we'll be taking a look at the fourth Disney film ever released, The Reluctant Dragon. I will be joined by Derek Bergen from the Pardon the Pixie Dust and the brand new E-Ticket Report podcast. If you heard our Fantasia episode with Derek, you know you're not going to want to miss this one, because this film is even more ridiculous than Fantasia. So, look forward to that. If you want to contact me, please do it up. You can email me at creepykingdom@gmail.com. I've been receiving several lovely emails. So, you know, feel free. Any comments, concerns, questions about the show, if you are interested in coming on the show, anything, hit me up, creepykingdom@gmail.com. You can visit our website for everything Creepy Kingdom you need. We've got the show notes, we got videos, we got creepy Disney fan art and cosplay pictures. We got links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. There's no LinkedIn. I don't know why I said that. Pinterest, Tumblr, Instagram, it's all there. And if you're on Twitter listening to this, definitely tweet me. Let me know. Because I'm very active on Twitter. Of course, that's at Creepy Kingdom is the Twitter handle. Please let me know what you think of the show by leaving a review in the iTunes store. That would be much appreciated. And, of course, you can find us on the Stitcher smartphone app for your phone that streams podcasts to your phone directly. No downloading required. Just search Creepy Kingdom in the Stitcher app. Well, until next time, my friends,
keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.